On the Mama Bear Dares podcast, we love and are encouraged by female podcasters giving helpful advice on motherhood. Mama Bear Dares aims to add to the conversation by turning the spotlight onto moms who have inspired us by doing big and bold things, in addition to being great mothers. We feature regular moms that you've sat next to at PTA meetings or smiled at while she tended to her screaming toddler in the middle of Target. These moms have started their own international nonprofits from their Lego lace living rooms, they've come out on the other side of losing a loved one, and they've carved out time to produce breathtaking art. We dare to deep dive into what makes these women more than mom and boldly ask the questions that we've all been thinking.
So come with us as we share the stories of women who love being called mom, but have shifted the paradigm that aims to stop there. Artists, entrepreneurs, creative visionaries, social change agents, activists, all women who have tapped their mama bears and dared to live full, joyful, duplicitous lives. Mama Bear, we dare you to witness the ripples they've started and begin to create some of your own. Hey guys, today you will hear our conversation with Jody Landers. We loved the conversation so much because she is always so ready to be vulnerable and go deep into conversation with friends, and she did the same for you. So I'm so excited for you to check it out. In the conversation, we talk a lot about something called Water for Christmas. So Leslie and I wanted to fill you in on any details that might be missing for those of you unaware of what we are talking about. Water for Christmas started as a goal to build a well, but very quickly became a movement.
It was so fun to reminisce with Jody about the beginning of this movement and to remember that in the first month, we surpassed our goal of $5,000 for clean water in Liberia, and we ended up raising $30,000. Within the first year, all of us who caught the vision because of Jody's leadership raised over $100,000.
I know, it's so crazy. And Leslie, I know you remember this, but I want our Mama Bear listeners to know that it wasn't all drudgery. I mean, there were days when all of us moms were in Jody's living room putting together bracelets, or I mean, remember, we were doing crazy things. And I'm sure you remember on a cold day in November dancing in the middle of an empty and abandoned pool for water, right? We did dancing for water.
I do. And that was something that you came up with, your marketing savvy, to have people dance for water and then ask them to make a donation every time they watched it on the internet. And I have to say, I was baptized sort of that day. I remember dancing to a song by U2, and then I think you might have been the one to dump a bucket of water just for the effect over my head. And our kids were standing by like, these women are crazy. But oh my gosh, it was so much fun and so effective.
It was so fun. We had people, I was just looking, the website is still there, but some of the videos have been taken down. If you want to check out dancingforwater.blogspot.com, you can kind of see a few of them that are still up there. But we had like fifth grade elementary students doing it and college kids. My parents did it with their friends. I mean, it was just so much fun. And it was a great example of how we managed to raise over $100,000 in that first year, because other people did what they love best. You and I love dancing, so that was a natural step. But everyone did kind of what they love and what they knew how to do best. And it ended up making so much money, raising so much money for charity water.
Yeah, by the time we stopped, I think we were over $500,000 that we had funded through Charity Water, and which is, it's just incredible.
It's
thousands of people have access to clean water now, just because a bunch of moms from the Midwest really felt the need and the desire to give their energy and their time and their talent to this cause.
Yeah, so even though it's been over for, I don't know, around 4 years or so that we've stopped pushing for Water for Christmas. You and I, that first year, we started our water party. Back then it was called Wine to Water. And we have continued doing that since. We funded Charity Water the first couple years, and then we moved on to the Adventure Project. And this most recent year, we did, the funds went to Empower Tanzania. But it is one of those things that we talked about in our first few podcasts where we introduced each other, this is really where the idea came from, was the Water for Christmas movement.
Yeah, and really, what's better than just inviting all of our friends over to eat cupcakes and drink wine? I mean, I
Nothing.
Think we really
Nothing is better.
we used our great joy to do some good in the world, and that's been a lot of fun. Ever since, you know, that one autumn in Iowa when the Water for Christmas movement really began.
That's true.
So we know that you listeners will fall in love with Jody during this conversation, and we think you'll be inspired to do something that maybe you've been wanting to do but have been too scared to try. As you know, and as we know, there's a mama bear in each and every one of you, so don't be afraid to let her out.
Yeah, let's get into the conversation. You can't let down your guard, better play it safe, or you might fall into someone else's bad day. Not in my bag. So today, Leslie, on the podcast, we have Jody Landers.
Yes, wonderful Jody Landers and her kitten that she is holding right now. And it's just adorable. So welcome, Jody.
Thank you. Fun to be here.
obviously, it's a podcast, so they can't see it. But we found that we really hit our rhythm when we can see one another because we're all about those various kinds of connections. So we get to see Jody's new kitten. You don't, but trust us, she is so adorable.
Adorable.
I met Jody about over 9 years ago. We went to a mutual church in Iowa, and I had started to hear a little bit about Jody because she happened to be the worship pastor's wife, but we were going through the process of adopting Teriku, or considering it. I can't remember if we were going through the actual process yet, but Jody and Andy, her husband, had already started the really long process of adopting from Sierra Leone. So we kind of had that connection. I had heard really amazing things about her, but I was a little nervous because I had kind of preconceived notions about what a pastor's wife was, and I just had no idea how to connect to that. But then I got to know her better because, first of all, she took care of Dayla in like the baby infant room of church, and we just would talk once in a while. And then we finally got on the subject of adoption and were really able to connect through that. We actually brought our kids home. She was adopting twins through Sierra Leone, Zeke and Cora, while I was adopting Teriku, and we brought them home pretty close to each other. Her process was a lot scarier and more intense than Terika's was, but we kind of traveled that road together. So after we brought them home, we were both a little wrecked, I would say, by our experiences in Africa and kind of what we saw developing countries dealing with. Specifically, we talked a lot about the water crisis. So when we got back and I wouldn't say settled in, but at least we're no longer jet lagged, Jody had the idea of forming an adoption and foster care small group. And so we did that. She then, what I thought was brilliant was she just didn't want to just sit and talk. She wanted to do. So she decided that we should on 1 month do something locally. So our first month for the local mission kind of did, we organized people to bring in stuff for backpacks for kids in the foster care system because Jody had found out that foster kids, when they're taken from their families, are often just asked to throw a few things in a garbage bag. And we just thought that was not what humans should ever have to do. So she had the idea of getting stuff together for backpacks. And then the first global mission we tried was dealing with the water crisis. So she had done a lot of research and came up with Charity Water as the nonprofit we could raise money for. And I think she can, we'll go into it more later, I'm sure, but I think our goal was $5,000 to fund a well at that time. And within the first month, due mostly to her energy, we raised something like $30,000 because she had spearheaded all of these women and who got excited about it. It was just a really remarkable thing.
Yeah, and this whole podcast is about kind of jumping in and taking chances, and it was about that time, Jody, that you kind of took a chance on a new girl in town. I had just moved there, and your group of awesome women kind of pulled me into your fold, which I really appreciated, and then we watched you through this adoption process. We watched you parent your four biological sons. We've seen you move from your home in Iowa to Colorado and then to Seattle. Watched you start an international nonprofit, the Adventure Project, which has just been so exciting. We've also seen you jump into a Kickstarter campaign to help fund your husband's music career. And we've just kind of sat back in awe as you've done this while shuffling six kids to all kinds of athletic and academic events. And so this is quite an introduction, but we're just so excited to know you.
Thank you. Wow.
I hope you feel like, oh my gosh, when it's all summed up there, I really did a lot of things.
Well, it's true. When you accept me like the, like what you, we were talking about, I was like, I don't know that I would actually describe myself as any of those things, like courageous or strong. I'm like, I don't ever do that. And then there's like this big long list. I'm like, gosh, yeah, I've done a lot of stuff.
You really have in a short amount of time.
Yeah. But yes. Yeah. Thank you. Those were good times. Tessie, I remember like the first memory I have of you was like bringing your kids to the nursery barefoot. Like you were always barefoot. What was that about?
I don't know. That did not surprise me in the least.
She was like, yeah, look, it was Iowa. It's freezing there. Like in the parking lot, barefoot.
That anyway. Is hilarious.
I have such ideas about style. And in my head, I'm that woman who like struts in high heels, carrying her child on her hip. And then about 3 minutes in, I'm like, this is a terrible calculation of my abilities.
That's right. Just barefoot. Much better.
That is really funny. So, but before we met you, before I met you too, and I didn't even know much about you other than that you were adopting when we started to become friends, but through the process of getting to know you as a friend, we heard about Quincy, who is your youngest. You have four biological sons, as Leslie said, and Quincy is your youngest. So after three relatively easy pregnancies, you delivered Quincy, who had multiple physical challenges, I guess would be, or how you would say it. So one of the questions that initially came to mind was just, you know, as a mom, if you've had three healthy pregnancies, you know how to kind of parent that. So where did you find the strength to advocate in a hospital situation where you were scared to death, obviously, of losing him, but also because I'm sure you just had no idea of any of what they were talking about or what kind of hills you guys would have to climb together in the coming years?
Yeah, I mean, Quincy was definitely the turning point for us in a lot of areas. But I mean, it was that moment where you're like, you're going in to deliver a baby, and then like the room goes silent when he comes, and I'm saying, okay, something's wrong here. And then I just remember like literally thinking, okay, this is the moment where everything changes. Like this is the moment where life takes a turn. And it really was in so many ways, as far as just changing the way that we saw the world and the way, yeah. So, I mean, obviously like we went in to have a healthy baby. We did not know that he was going to have issues, and he has a birth defect. It's called bladder extrophy. And, people describe it as the most, like the most complex birth defect that's compatible with life. So it's just ridiculous, really. I mean, just lots and lots of surgeries and repairs and painful things and issues forever. So anyway, so it was the beginning of a journey with him, and it thrust us into an environment where everybody is fighting some sort of battle like that. When, you know, we lived in the NICU for 6 weeks and brought Quincy home in a body cast. And then, you know, in the years coming just back and forth to children's hospitals, and it just opened my eyes to this whole, like, I was like, I was just like so happy not knowing that this whole other world existed, you know, and now all of a sudden it was not a choice that we made, but we were right in the middle of that. And, began to realize that there were, that was where God lived, and we had been missing out on pieces of God's heart by being protected from those environments. So it was a huge turning point. And that was when I began to like sort of find my voice through writing and through blogging. And I think it was just like, it started with Quincy in the hospital and we were just trying to keep people updated, friends and family updated. And it just became an easier way to let everybody know the fastest information. But, it began to be such a therapeutic process for me to like, mm-hmm. just like, this is what happened today and this is how I feel about it. It was like an intentional decision. Like, if we're going to do this, we're not going to do this alone. Like, I'm not interested in walking this road alone. So we, you know, very quickly invited people into the journey with us and were very open and honest about the struggles from the beginning. And I look back as that being one of the best decisions that we made of just allowing people to walk that road with us. And then it drew us to the right people. I mean, like when we talk about all these things that we did later on, it was like, it was so natural because I was at that point already surrounded by just like these awesome people, you know, mm-hmm. like it's going to like come into that world with you. And it was so easy. And I would, you know, I'm always pretty like, everybody doesn't have friends like that. You know, like everybody around me was like so awesome. So, but I think, you know, that vulnerability just sort of invites, you know, the right type of people.
So, Joe, can you talk more, a little bit more about this blog and how writing was therapeutic for you during just those moments from the beginning of the blog with Quincy, but then also through the adoption process and through a lot of the advocacy work that you've done?
Yeah, it just ended up being like a really cool medium to like connection. And it was just, I'm like classic introvert, like given an option, this is where I would be with my cat, you know, no humans in sight. So it's not really, you know, that's not really conducive to starting a movement. So, but I found it easier to, you know, and I said, I mean, like I would often say, like, I don't know how I feel until I blog. Like I could, like there was like things that were like welling up inside, but until I went through the process of trying to articulate it or just like, or even not even trying, just like getting it out. Mm-hmm. And then I would just like feel such relief, like, oh, that, you know, like that felt so good. And it was never for really for the reader, but just as more of a process for me. And I think my mother loved it because she got to, you know, Andy would often say like, I don't know how you're feeling either until I read the blog. And it's true. Like, uh-huh. Right. Nobody knows. Like, I don't know. Nobody knows until it's just like until that process sort of happens. So it was really for me, but it ended up, you know, sort of taking on a life of its own and connecting me with, again, like all of these super awesome women and just opening up all sorts of, you know, worlds. So it just continued through the adoption process, and the adoption world is known for its, you know, bloggers. I mean, I think it's helps a lot of people through that mm-hmm. process. So that was, I met some of my closest friends through the blogging adoption process. And since then we used it to catapult Water for Christmas. And then, even when things like fell apart in our life, it served a purpose as well to just like, all right, you know, like you've been through everything else. We might as well, you know, like it was anyway. So it's always been there. And I don't do it anymore just because my kids are older, I think is probably, it makes it harder to sort of respect their privacy. And mm-hmm. we're not loving going to school and hearing about people reading mom's blogs.
Sure. That makes sense. Are you doing any writing for yourself, even though it's not being pushed out into the world? Are you still processing through writing?
Well, I mean, occasionally I'll come up with like a really great Facebook post.
Okay.
Like, oh, it's still in there. No. but no, the discipline of it is not as regular anymore, which is unfortunate, but I think that I will revisit it again mm-hmm. at some point, but it's just, it's just a different season right now.
Well, so. We hope so. And so a lot of people drew a lot of strength from your words when you were blogging and now from the occasional Facebook post. and you know, you embody so many qualities of just vulnerability and yet this really powerful strength that you hold inside, and you let the world see that. And I'm wondering, so these are the great things that we admire about you. What is it when you talk about having a community of really the best people in the world, of just really great friends? What is it about the friends in your lives? What qualities do they have? What are you drawn to?
And that's interesting because, like, I guess I've never really, sat down and be like, what do all these people have in common that are, part of my world? Or, I think that you're right. There's like this combination of just like inner strength and fierceness and, coupled with this just like deep compassion and being willing to tell the truth and being self-aware enough of just like our own failure. I mean, just this, I don't have time or this, I'm like, I don't have the capacity for like small talk. Like, and so if like you are unwilling to go with me very quickly to, what's really, I just can't. Like, and I don't know why. I don't know what happened to me. And it's probably should talk to a therapist about it. But so it's like very quickly you can just see, like, are people willing to go there or not? And, and I just, with my limited, social capacity that I have, like, I just, will gravitate towards the people that are willing to go there. And when those type of people, man, once you go there, like, things happen really fast. Mm-hmm. Because, like, you're connected semi-quickly, and then they're like, okay, what are we doing next? Let's do it, and then everybody's like ready to roll. So
you're so right. When I was thinking about what questions we would want to ask you that goes with what the mama bears who are listening, what could connect them, it was the idea that kind of the crazy part about when you started the foster and adoption care group was that in theory it was just all a bunch of housewives. I mean, most of us, right, we were stay-at-home moms with various amounts of kids, but mostly we had one woman in there with 10 children, right? So so we had just run the gamut. But right from the start, you didn't have to set the stage at all. Not all of them had been to Africa. Most of them had not. But you didn't have to set the stage at all for why we had to do this, both globally and locally, because they already had the heart that you talk about. They were already very compassionate. They already knew and trusted you in a way that was clearly not surface level. You guys had obviously delved into the kind of deeper things that make us as women tick. And so I think that's why it really from the start did well, because you had already set that in motion and had gotten together this group of women who all were really just similar in that way.
Yeah. Yeah. And we did, I mean, we spent enormous amount of time together. I mean, like, those were the years that, like, mm-hmm. I mean, we would sit in each other's homes for like 7 hours a day while our kids slept and play. I mean, like, we were spending enormous amount of times together, just mm-hmm. dreaming and talking and every, and so you're right. The relationship foundation was there where we, loved and trusted each other. And so
talk about the Water for Christmas movement, and just tell us a little bit for people who don't know just why it got started and how it got started and how it ended up changing so many people's lives.
Well, yeah, you guys can jump in too, because it's all a little fuzzy to me, like, how I don't really remember, but I do. I think it was like, we decided to do a global cause and it was like Christmas time. So we're like, well, what if we, what if all of our families just gave up part of their Christmas and we tried to drill a well for Christmas? And then everybody's like, yeah, we'll do that. And then we just started talking about it, I think, on our various blogs and various, networks of friends. And then just the idea, I mean, I think it was just like something so easy that people could be like, I can do that. And that's how, it just sort of snowballed. And then we had, lots of people giving up water for Christmas and ended up raising a lot of money. And then it was like, Christmas was over and we were like, well, that was fun and we don't want to stop. Like, what if we do wells, and we just, just kept going. But yeah, it was just like you said, this group of moms who are like, well, our family will do that. And then, they tell their friend and their friend's like, oh, we can do that. And I don't know. Is that how you guys remember it?
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, the biggest thing too is that it just was one of those magical moments where it's like, oh, I know someone who makes shirts. They'll make shirts. Oh, I know someone who makes pens. We'll make pens.
Yeah.
And it really was that thing where there was like a core group of people who were maybe organizing initially. But I remember towards the end of that season, there were like 30 people in a living room, you know, yeah. And I knew maybe five of them.
Yeah.
So it just became so big. You were able to really rally people and play to their strengths really, really well. And I know you don't necessarily take that, but you were certainly the leader and the instigator in it all. And you were just so able to play up to strengths that I think that's the biggest part of the success.
Oh yeah. Well, yeah, those were such fun days. I mean, even now I look back and be like, you just don't get that probably more than once in a lifetime. Those were really cool group of people. So
yeah, incredible people and so many different talents. And as you were saying, Tessie, just the way that everyone was using their unique abilities and strengths in order to kind of move this cause along. It was fantastic. I'm curious, Jody, when this all started, this was what, November 2008?
When did you bring Zeke and Cora home? 2008, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So where you were a pastor's wife in a small town in Iowa, and like all of a sudden you just unleashed this idea and this kind of movement really in our small community. So Jody, this kind of spread throughout not just the United States, but really the world. And pretty soon, you know, you're a woman with a lot of children in a small town in Iowa, and you ventured to New York to visit the Charity Water offices, and you know, we're receiving accolades for these things. Sometimes I think when women yield power, there's some feedback or some kickback possibly. Did you feel anything other than support, or how did people respond to you during this sort of magical time?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm sure there was pushback. I don't have like vivid memories of a lot of pushback. I just remember being always surprised by like why people thought this was such a big deal. I'm like, aren't people doing this everywhere? Like, I didn't understand that that there weren't groups of housewives, you know, building wealth everywhere. So because again, it's sort of back. I had surrounded myself with just these incredible women. It was just like such a natural progression that it was like, I didn't really get why it was such a big deal, but but it was super cool. And it was super fun to sort of just give a voice to those people that were in my living room being like, you know, and the Charity Water people would, I mean, I think at first they thought we were like totally fraudulent or something. Happening. We keep hearing about this, like, are you sure that we're getting all this money?
Because wasn't it the first month they received like $60,000 in donations from Iowa?
Yes, it like skyrocketed Iowa to one of their tops, which they had like never gotten a donation from Iowa before, so they're like, what is happening?
Right, because it was early on in their organization too.
Yeah,
they were a new
they were young too. Yeah.
Yeah. Now they're one of the biggest in the world, but for sure in the beginning, it was not that way. So it certainly.
And now, I mean, I think we do see it happening way more often. You know, we do see people like realizing, oh gosh, I can do this from my computer at home and I can be a part of, which has been something super cool that, you know, organizations like Charity Water have done, sort of given people that power. So, but yeah, back in the olden days when we were good. it was sort of new. So it was exciting. And
well, yeah. And I think the incredible part was it was Muscatine, Iowa. So, and all of our donations coming in were small.
$10.
$8. And so what was crazy was, you know, you hear $60,000 or whatever it ended up being that first year. It was just an unbelievable amount. But what people don't realize, maybe some of the mama bear community don't realize, is we were all on strict family budgets. And somehow we managed to do that and encourage other people to do that as well. And I think, you know, back like what you said, it kind of came back to when, what you started when Quincy was born, which is really just being real with what's going on and somehow making the kids who don't have clean water. And at that time we were raising money for Liberia, the kids who don't have clean water in Liberia, you somehow made it sound very personal and in our own backyard, which was, they do that really well now. International nonprofits do, but they just didn't then. They had no idea how to make that connection. So I feel like you were really on the cutting edge of that. You somehow managed to do that really, really easily.
Wow, that's nice. Yeah. I mean, I do think like we were just like, the whole idea was like, let's just keep our eyes open. Like what would happen if we all just kept our eyes open, you know, and paid attention to what's happening in the world and paid attention to what's happening to our neighbors. And, you know, it was just like very, it was like this, like that very simple lenses that we just all started to put on. Like, you know, what if we noticed suffering in the world and decided we could be a part of that? And I do think like we all had young kids. And I do think, you know, like when we're all starting to have families and babies, like, and you're a new mom and you realize, oh my gosh, I love these kids so much. Like there's just this intensity to like our love for our kids as we're growing a family or whatever. And then just like connecting that with like perhaps women all over the world feel the same way about children, you know, and can you imagine not being able, it was just like that simple jump. Like, what would it be like to not be able to protect them from, you know, clean, you know, dirty water that's going to eventually take their life, and to, you know, to know that you were having to feed them something that's going to kill them, you know, like, can you imagine, you know, it was just like, and then once we sort of like caught that vision, it was like, there's just no stopping that.
Just that sort of love and that sort of momentum for sure.
That's so good.
Jody, let's backtrack a little bit and talk to us about how you were feeling when you came home from Sierra Leone. What about that trip and that experience and what you saw there and what you experienced, just how did that kind of shape the way that you view the world?
Yeah, I mean, I just think like we were so relieved to be home with Zeke and Cora. Like, just, it was such a like crazy, scary process, and the trip was like a whirlwind that I was just like so relieved to be home. But there was like this moment where we're like, the boat is pulling away from Sierra Leone and the kids are with us. And it's like, we're finally like taking a deep breath and realizing, gosh, this is like I am taking them away from this. And this is a huge privilege and this is a huge deal. Like, and so if I am going to take these kids home and raise them and get the privilege of being their parents, that they're, I had a responsibility to be a part of the bigger picture of, you know, creating a world where the adoption of orphans was not necessary. So, it was, I mean, and that was like, I remember where I was standing. I remember how I was feeling, you know, it was like that moment where like, okay, like this is going to change things from here on out in the way that, you know, that I have a greater responsibility than just parenting these kids. So, I think that was sort of the driving force for like, okay, what's that going to look like? You know? And then we just all gathered in the living room and started chatting, you know, like, what does this look like and what could we do? Like, what's our little piece going to be? And,
tell us where you were standing. Go back to that moment.
In Sierra Leone, you have to like ride a boat to get to the airport. It's super awesome. So everything is very complicated. But so it was like a little ferry type boat. And so we were standing out on the balcony and holding the kids and pulling away from like the mainland there in Sierra Leone, headed to the airport, and just sort of looking back at everything we were leaving behind and just sort of the hardship and the reality of life there and the beauty and, you know, all of it. And just being like, I don't want to forget this. And I don't want to, you know, I want the kids to always know that we were a part of a bigger picture there as well.
Jody, it takes a brave person, a special person, or an interesting kind of person who finds themselves on a boat in the Sierra Leone. I mean, and let me just back up and say too that we're talking about Muscatine, Iowa, which is a lovely place. It's a great community, but I don't think they had a Starbucks until like last year or something. Like, this is what we're looking at here, and yet there you were.
That's Leslie's barometer.
There you were in the middle of the Sierra Leone, you know. And I guess I'm curious for our listeners to hear just how did you get there? I mean, where did this attitude kind of come from? Or what is it about your personality or maybe the way you were raised? Or I don't know. Tell us what it is. Like, how do you get from a place in the middle of Iowa with no Starbucks to like this amazing just mission that you're on and this amazing life that you've carved out?
I have no idea. So there you go.
Maybe write about it. Maybe you'll
right.
You'll figure it out.
I'll tell you on Facebook later.
Okay.
No, I mean, I really don't know. Like all I can say is that I've always been scared. Like all of those moments I was terrified. You know, like there's nothing in me that was like, it was never natural for me. Like, I don't think, I do think that like our experiences with Quincy were like this moment where I realized like, as much as I have been able to, or as much as I would like to control my world and protect my kids or whatever, that it turns out I actually don't have any control. Like turns out your world can be flipped upside down in a moment and you are just along for the ride. And all of a sudden, you know, I was pulling from resources that I didn't know I had because I had never had to use them before, you know. And then it was like, when we would come up for a breather, I'd be like, oh my gosh, did we just survive another 10-hour surgery where my baby's being cut? Like, did I just literally survive? And like, and I did, but because I had to, you know, like I didn't have a choice, you know? But I think because I didn't have a choice in that, I realized that actually there are resources there, you know, like I am capable of things that are not natural or things or doing things. I'm capable of doing things scared. That I probably wouldn't have like reached for or pulled from had I not been forced to, you know. But then it's like once your like world is opened up to it, and then like you realize, gosh, it's there. I just have to choose to use it. I have to put myself in situations where I have to use it. And so, you know, the adoption process and some of these other things were choices that we made to put ourselves in those places again where we're scared and we don't know what we're doing and we're just, you know. But it was, I think I realized that I could do that because I didn't have a choice. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
You know, like, so yeah, I mean, it was like when you realize you like really literally have no control, and that then it's like you stop trying so hard because it's like, it doesn't even matter. Like I can try so hard to protect these kids from everything and I don't get to choose. Like I don't. So we might as well be brave and we might as well put ourselves in those places where, you know, God's doing cool things and be a part of that. Cause, yeah. So
I think that's one of the reasons we first thought of you, because the podcast is called Mama Bear. And at the end, we always do a Mama Bear dares you to do something. And, you know, mama bears don't get feisty unless they're forced to, right? And so I think that's a big thing. People assume when they see women doing things that you've done that we've talked about so far, they haven't even heard about all the stuff you've done since then. They assume that you were born with this natural ability to just be like, let's try this and let's try this. And I'm capable of doing all of that. But knowing you personally, I can attest to the fact that you're right. You are scared.
Yeah.
Doing all of those. And yet you do. You just kind of channel this mama bear instinct that is just so remarkable. And that's why I knew you'd be so relatable to our mama bear kind of nation of moms, because we're all scared. We're all so scared of exactly what you talked about. But I love that how you said we might as well use it for good, because we're all scared. So you can sit in a corner and cry, which there's time for that, or you can use it, and you use it in such a great way. It's so fun to watch.
Well, and just putting yourselves in those positions to be scared, that is something you have to be intentional about. You have to be awake to the world. You have to have, you know, have to read the newspaper, and kind of, you know, we have the potential to live very sheltered lives and not even realize just the suffering that happens next door, and all around us. And so that's something I think too, is just, you are obviously aware to what's going on in this world, and then using that kind of mama bear instinct to go out and try to make it a better place within your capacity.
Yeah, no, I think it's true. I mean, like, it's like what we talked about a few minutes ago. It's like, you do have to be awake, you know, you do have to be awake, and you have to be, you know, I just feel like there's self-aware enough to know, like, okay, like, where can we play into this, you know, like, and what's our little piece? And then knowing your limitations. I mean, like, we knew we were just moms in Iowa with a million kids, you know, so like, we just took on things that we could do, you know, there were things that we couldn't do and we were not capable of, but there were, you know, and just taking the first step to do what you can do. And then, like, usually we didn't know what the next, I mean, honestly, like, we had no idea where it was going. Like, it was really like, tomorrow this, and then, like, you know, then the next day, let's try this the next day. It was just really just the next step and the next step. And that's how all of those situations are. Like, anytime that we're, you know, the adoption process was like that, like, I have no idea, we're just going to do the next step and then the next step.
It's interesting, though, to hear you say we only did what we knew we were capable of, and then a year later you started an international nonprofit. So I think, like, that's what I want to know is, you, because I know how genuinely humble you are, you go from organizing, you know, a handful of moms around a few causes to co-founding the Adventure Project. So can you talk a little bit about how the Adventure Project was born?
When we were in the whole Water for Christmas process, Charity Water, they took me, and then we brought one of our other fundraisers with us to Liberia to see some of the projects that we had funded. So I went on a trip to Liberia, and the Charity Water staff person that was assigned to meet us there was Becky. And so she took us around Liberia anyway. So we just kind of, I mean, and she was like my exact opposite. So, you know, she's single and in New York, and she is powerful and strong and intense and so smart. And I was just like, I have a lot of kids at home, and I just think of, you know, like, but I was so curious, you know, like, I was just curious about everything. So just drilling her with questions in the back of the Jeep in Liberia anyway.
And this is Becky Straw, who goes on to be your co-founder. But go on. I just wanted to interject that.
Thank you. Yes. So anyway, so yeah, it just began with a friendship with Becky. And then, you know, a couple years later, Becky ended up leaving Charity Water, and she was in Denver. And we were in Denver at that point. She said, let's meet for dinner. And so we just met. She's like, I think I'm going to do this. I really want to focus on jobs. This was the need that I saw in all of my traveling. And she's like, I want you to help me. You know, and I mean, honestly, I was like, I would have never dream, like, I would have never put myself in that position. Like, she does not need me. But, you know, there was a piece of, like, she had the experience and the education and the to drive an organization, and there was just this piece of being connected to just the everyday person that I think was part of the puzzle that, you know, that we brought. But anyway, so yeah, so we had dinner, and then it was like 6 months of craziness. And then I think we launched 6 months later or something like that. So,
because Leslie and I have never actually, I know this may surprise our Mama Bear listeners, but we've never launched international nonprofits. So tell us about the launch day, because it just, on the outside, it seems like, oh, it'd be so exciting, but that can't possibly be it, right?
Well, yeah, I mean, it was so exciting, but it was so, you know, it's so much work, and it is so scary. And you, I mean, it's like, you work so hard, and you put it, you know, but then you never know how it's going to be received in the world. Like, are people going to get it? Is this going to make sense? Are people going to be excited as we are about this? Or, so again, you know, we're at that moment where you're just doing something scared, you know, you're just doing the next step scared. And, but yeah, we worked really hard, and Becky was the brains behind that for sure. Like, she had done it before with Charity Water, so she sort of knew the nuts and bolts of, you know, how to do that. And so yeah, those were scary. I mean, it's like sink or swim. Like, here we go. Like,
and the Adventure Project is doing very well. I mean, I love the Adventure Project. It's still around. It's now what, in year three, four?
Four, I think.
Four.
Yeah, four. Yeah, great.
But you know, just like you said, they create jobs. That's kind of their, they add venture, which is the adventure project. Mm-hmm. And they're creating sustainable, really remarkable things. So can you tell us a little bit about what it was like? Obviously, Water for Christmas was so focused on water, but what it was like to learn more about really the vast array of things that can hurt families in developing countries.
Yeah. I mean, the issues are so complex, and there's just so many layers, of course, to all of those things. But I mean, I think that it was born from, you know, Becky would travel to drill wells or check on wells, and she would go to the different villages, and everybody would say, thank you so much for coming, you know, to provide this water. But I was just wondering, do you have any jobs, or do you know of any jobs, you know, and just how desperate people were for that. Like, they wanted to provide for their families, and they wanted to be able to have the, you know, the dignity of that. And so, so sort of, you know, driven from that idea that, how can we come alongside of them and then give them the power to change their own communities and change their own families. And so focused on job creation. So each element has a job creation piece to it, but it's also, you know, tied to addressing an issue, a poverty issue. So there's, you know, the coal stoves that address this toxic smoke issue, and the well mechanics that address the clean water issue, and these farm pumps that address, you know, irrigation farm issues, and then they have these healthcare workers, these rural healthcare workers that you know, address very basic healthcare needs. So yeah, it's sort of a cool coupling of, you know, being able to provide jobs, but giving them a very significant job too, that's addressing an issue. So
I loved in Haiti seeing both, well, there it was the clean stoves, as I said before. So seeing the one selling the stoves, I think there was a woman named Nicole who sold like 60 stoves a month or something outrageous, really one of the most successful in terms of amount of stoves sold. And she was talking about how her kids would get to go to school, and she was getting to provide in a way that she was never able to. But then we also met another woman who was just so thrilled that she could buy a new shirt. You know, that was, and I loved seeing that it was meeting a need on a grander scale in communities and in the country at large, but also in something as simple as a new shirt. Because we've all had that new shirt that just makes you feel like $1 million. And this woman was so, so excited about that. And I just remember thinking that the Adventure Project was onto something in terms of meeting a local global need with a very specific local person, you know?
It's, they're really cool stories from the field of, how it's transforming their lives. So.
Okay. So Jody, we talked about your launch day of the Adventure Project, and really, again, you kind of described it as just taking one foot and putting it in front of the other, just doing one step led to the next. And I think that seemed to be, looking from the outside in, what happened when your husband, Andy, who is a musician, decided to kind of take his career to the next level. And again, it was sort of a one step in front of the other type of situation where Andy quit working, right? His kind of safe job, and you guys launched a Kickstarter campaign for his musical career. So talk a little bit about that and just how, again, that one small step that you took has really changed the way your family has lived and kind of his legacy on this world.
And we're still sort of in the middle of that, so I'm not sure how this is all going to play out. that was another, you know, sort of big do it scared thing, you know, another step for us to decide that we were going to sort of alter the, it was pretty obvious that we needed something to change for Andy, that there was that he was dying a slow death and, you know, as far as the direction of his life. So And this, you know, it's one of those things that was like always in the back of his head, but it was just like, it's not practical because we have six kids and this is, you know, like this just, it's just will never happen. And I think, you know, like I'm partially to blame for that because it was all, oh, it's been something we've talked about for years, but you know, the practical part of me just couldn't wrap my head around how we were going to do that. So,
but well, how'd you get to that point? You had moved to Seattle, obviously. And so Seattle has, we'll put a link to Andy's music in the show notes, as well as your old blog, so people can read for days and days and get to know you a little better too. But Andy's music is a really good fit for Seattle, actually. Was that part of kind of why it felt like a good time?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's so many reasons why, you know, part of it was forced season of like, okay, this is our best choice right now. And part of it was, there's just so many things that play into that. But I think, you know, like, I do think that God uses all of those like discomfort and this like unsettledness and, you know, all these different pieces to kind of push us to that point where like we're ready. And so I think that, you know, this honestly, like, and we still say it, like, this was not a smart idea. There was nothing smart about this. We are just like, our kids are getting, like, we have all these, I mean, the kids are getting more expensive and we are making less money than we ever have in our whole life. You know, like, there was nothing planned out and smart about this. Like, if it were this, the two of us, like, this would be a grand plan, but it's not. And so, so I still don't really know how to explain that. It was just a very, but it does feel right. At the same time, it does feel right. Like we're still in the process of how this is all going to play out and if we're actually going to be able to, you know, make this all work practically. But in the sense of like, is it what Andy was made to do? And is it meaning? Yes, for sure. Like it is by far the best fit for him as far as what I, you know, what he has to offer the world, I really feel like. And I think people have seen that in him forever, you know, and just, we could just never figure out how to make those worlds meet, like, you know, this talent and this passion for, you know, telling stories that cross not only to a church culture, but, you know, across the lines or whatever, and raising a family of eight people. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, like I had been working for nonprofits and working for free and, you know, like, so like we did not have a great foundation for this. Literally we're in that process right now where it's just like, well, we're just going to do the next step. Like we're going to try and feed the kids tomorrow and, you know, try like that's the plan. So,
Jody, what do your days look like now? Tell us about like an average day for you. Tell us about the work that you are doing.
So I am no longer employed at the Adventure Project. It just became really like, it was just not conducive to raising all these kids right now. And the amount of time that I need to be home, it just, you know, requires a lot of travel and that sort of thing that I loved, but it was just not for this season. So, so now I just like sit on their board and am, you know, super big advocate fan of theirs. And then as Andy took this leap, I just took an office job, you know, with a friend of ours at an investment office just to sort of help pay bills. And then I do work very, very part-time from home for a real estate company doing like some charitable giving for them. So just like sort of a hodgepodge of, you know, part-time gigs that allow me to make a little bit of money but still be home because Andy's traveling a lot. So I couldn't, you know, take a really full-time job and then still be able to be a single mom to six kids while he's, you know, running having to travel a lot. So, it's pretty funny, actually. It's a not very glamorous life right now, but it's work. I mean, it works, you know, like it works. And I'm learning to just like appreciate so many different, you know, different aspects. I mean, like a new compassion for people that, you know, really have to live day to day like this, who really, you know, like they have to go to work, you know, for, mm-hmm. to feed their kids at night. And so, it's just, you know, just again, like in every stage is just open, you know, just opens your eyes to a whole new thing. And there's great people everywhere, you know, like there's just, I mean, I work in an investment office of which, you know, I previously knew nothing about. And it turns out there's, you know, they're great people there, you know, and I love working with them and they're honest and, you know, like, so it's just like, you can find your people anywhere. Mm-hmm. And you can find those like core values that, that drove adoption and drove Water for Christmas, you know, like you can find them anywhere. So just, you know, I spend a lot and we spend, you know, so many hours a week right now. Our kids are at those ages where it's just like constantly, you know, sitting in tournaments and games. And some of my best friends are now the moms that sit next to me in the bleachers, mm-hmm. or the coaches or what, you know, like, it's just like adjusting your world a little bit. And they're great people, you know, and we love them. Mm-hmm. So that's sort of where we're at right now.
I like that you talk about seasons because I feel like there's pressure on women in general. Maybe men feel it as well. I've never been a man, so I can't say for sure. But just that if you're super productive one season, you know, like you started this international nonprofit and whatever, that you have to maintain that the rest of your life or there's some sort of thing gone wrong. But really, life is so seasonal, you know, and you're just... Because Dawson, your oldest, is how old? 16?
16, yeah.
16. And then Zeke and Cora are?
10.
10. But that's just a super intense time when all of your kids are involved in as many things as yours are. And so I just love that you talked about seasons because I don't want any of the mama bears to think that because you are doing one thing, then you can't kind of continue to move and shake with whatever comes about. You know, you have to be so so open to change as a mom, really.
No, yeah, for sure. And I think that, like, to give yourself the grace enough to understand that there are those different seasons. And I think I just at this last adoption conference, this was what I talked about, this idea of coupling like courage and care within your family. Like there are seasons where we are like leading our family out on an unsafe mission towards the battle, very aggressive. But you can't survive life in that always going out. So there are times when you have to bring them back into safety. So you bring them back into a culture of safety and care where we're just caring for one another and we're, you know, like, and then you go back out and then you come back in. It's like the ocean, you know, like it goes out and it comes in. Like you can't be in a continual going and you can't be in continual coming. Like you can't just stay always huddled up because that's, you know, that's what led us to start in the first place is that feeling of, gosh, you know, we're keeping our family safe, but there's more to this. So then you lead them out, but then you come back, you know, like it's just this constant motion throughout life. So I think, you know, the past couple of years I've had to realize that, you know, like this is a coming in time for us, mm-hmm. and that's okay. You know, like mm-hmm. there will be another season where we are going out full force or whatever. And just to just, that's all part of being able to sustain for the long haul is you have to have both, you know, like you can't have one or the other. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. And it looks so differently for every family. And so there's just like no formula for that. Mm-hmm. Just like just to be aware of, you know, the culture of your family. Like, do we need to go out more? Do we need to come back in and just like build those rhythms into your day and years or whatever? So
I think that's really true. And I also think when you're in it, when you're in parenthood, I feel especially when you're a passionate person and you're parenting, you feel like, no, I've got to do it now. Like now mm-hmm. I have to do this. But it's when you take a step back and look at the perspective, like life is long, hopefully, mm-hmm. and by the grace of God, you know, that life, you've got years and years. I mean, we've read a lot of accomplishments and great things that you've been up to over the years, but it's taken years, you know, because you have this rhythm of your family. So although I like to live with a sense of urgency, I like to kind of keep in mind too, that keep the long game in mind, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
So Jody, in times where maybe things haven't gone as planned, or maybe you're kind of in the pits a little bit, how have you found yourself able to kind of rise up, as maybe Brené Brown would talk about? How do you kind of get into that arena, and the times that you've been knocked down, what is it that about you or about the people around you that makes you survive those things and survive it well?
I don't know. But I do think that there's like, and this, I don't even think that, I don't know if this is good or not. So maybe you guys can tell me or not, but there is like the stubbornness. I think that like when something happens to me that like knocks me down or when my world, like, and I feel out of control, like I hate that feeling of feeling out of control or where things are happening to me, which I, and so like part of me is like, okay, I have zero control over this, but the only thing I can control is the kind of person I'm going to be. So damn it. Like I am going to be like, I'm going to choose. I get to choose now. Like you can, you guys can throw all this other stuff at me. The universe can throw this at, but you don't get to choose who I become through this and what kind of person this makes me. And so like, it was like this last semblance of control, like that I was like grasping for, like, then I'm, you know, then I'm going to be the most compassionate person that I can possibly be. I'm going to keep my eyes open. I'm going to be kinder. I'm going to be, you know, like all of these things. And it was just like this deep stubbornness to be like, I get to control that. Mm-hmm. And I do think that that does help, you know, like that does help this, like when you realize you actually do get to control quite a bit, you know, like even when life, you know, throws you a child with huge, you know, needs or a marriage falls apart, when you get to choose what kind of person you're going to become out of that. And that is intensely hard work, by the way. Like it's not like something you just like get to decide and then like, yay, you know, like it is super hard work, but it like gives you something to control in the process of the uncontrollable, which for some reason like gave power back to me, you know, like gave power back to me. And I think that, you know, it gives you the grace to stand up and gives you the grace to keep going or whatever, because you do realize actually I, you know, like I do get to decide here what kind of person I want to be.
I love that so much. So do you see the kids exemplifying some of that as well? I know Quincy's coming up here in a couple weeks facing another major surgery. Do you see he's kind of the most recent example of someone who might have to dig deep like that and get a little stubborn? Do you see any of your kids exemplifying that same kind of character when things are down and dumpy?
Yeah, I mean, I hope so. I mean, obviously they're all still in process, you know, so we still, you know, we get glimpses of it. And again, of course, Quincy is, you know, the great necessities in his life that, you know, are calling that forward in him maybe sooner than it would otherwise. And we are seeing glimpses of that in him. But again, you know, like it will be his choice. Like it comes so internally, like that, just that feeling or whatever, that it's not something that I can force on them. And hopefully just model it to the point that they're like, I want that, you know, whatever it is. So yeah, I mean, we see glimpses of it. And again, but still in process for sure. And it's not something that I mean, I did just recently, we just talked about this whole, like, you know, changing the way that we've started to pray with Quincy and the other kids, as far as, you know, rather than like make our situation better or make this surgery go well or whatever, to just like make this count in our lives, because it was discouraging to keep praying these prayers of, you know, I hope that the surgery goes well and I feel better. And then no, it doesn't. And no, it doesn't. You know, it was just like really toxic to his little faith. So when we sort of like changed the wording to just, you know, make this count, like if we have to be here in the hospital, if we have to go through another surgery, you know, help us, help this to develop something in our lives to make us braver and stronger and kinder or whatever. And so, I mean, that's the only thing I can think of that's like super intentional, really. Mm-hmm. Otherwise it's just like, it's just life. Like they're just watching us do life with everything that it throws at us, you know, like when, you know, when we fail a test or when we pass a test or when we make a team, when we don't make a team, when the surgery goes well, when the surgery, in like everything, you know, when marriage is hard, when marriage is great, like what, how are we reacting to that? And what are we, you know, it's like those moments I think are just like, that's the training ground of which we're not even having to be intentional about, because it's just life, mm-hmm. you know? And so I don't know. I hope they're catching it, but we'll see.
Well, and kids pay attention, right? They pick up on all of that. So like you said, even though they might not say, Mom, I'm facing this really big surgery, but I'm going to make it count, even though you don't, you know, just like Leslie talked about earlier, you kind of have to be in for the long game. Parenting is like the quintessential version of just pouring so much energy in the hopes that the long game turns out okay.
Totally. And realizing that it is ultimately their choice. Mm-hmm. Like it is like, you know, ultimately they will decide, and life will, you know, life will present the opportunities for them to call it forth in their life as well. You know, and there's only so much we can manipulate there, but,
right. Yeah, that's true. Very true.
And I know our mama bear community will want to be thinking of Quincy for his next surgery. So it's March 30th. Yeah. So we'll be thinking and praying and sending good energy to Quincy and you guys on that.
Yes.
And maybe we can send out an update on our Mama Bear Dares Facebook page and Twitter and all of that too, so that they can stay updated. Or maybe we'll just have you take it over, because once in a while, remember, you get that energy to Facebook something brilliant.
I'll let you know.
So I know you and I talked about this on a phone call, I don't know, a week or so ago, but have you since read any books that we'd want to read? You usually are reading really, you are a, you know, voracious reader, but again, it's cyclical. So are you?
It is. Like when you were like, what's your passion right now? And I was like, my passion right now is survival. So, I mean, it really is a day-to-day thing right now. So, the capacity for a lot of like deep reading is not happening at the moment. But okay, so these are just like my go-to like classic,
yeah.
Like if you need like defining moment or change the way that I see, like I literally feel like these books change the way that I see the world.
Okay.
Brennan Manning's Ragamuffin Gospel and All is Grace. Like, I can't even say All is Grace without crying. That's how much that book hit me at the right time. Mm-hmm. So, I love him. And then anything by Frederick Buechner. Mm-hmm. It's spelled like Buechner, but I actually, mm-hmm. I think you say Buechner. But, anyway, I just think he's such a beautiful writer and just like puts things in a different perspective. And anyway, I love anything that he does. And then Henry Nouwen's like Morning Into Dancing, and Life of the Beloved, both of those. And then I feel like was one of the early adopters of Brené Brown, and still just think everything that she does is amazing. But I did recently go back and read her very first book. That was like, I thought it was just me or something.
Uh-huh. Have you guys read this? No, but uh-huh. I think she was talking about how they were re-releasing it.
Oh, are they?
Yeah.
It was super interesting after having like known her later work to go back and read. Like, you can see her process beginning and then just like sort of how it's developed. But it was actually really, really good. And
okay.
I would, I just think I should go back and read that one too. So, yeah. And then Anne Lamott, anything she does, well, so yeah, resonate with her as well. So yeah, those are some.
Good. Yeah.
I'll put links in the show notes to all of those too, so that our Mama Bear listeners can get those as well.
Yeah.
I can't wait for listeners to hear this, because as much as you pretend like you are like, there's this nobody special, in some ways you're right in that you're just living life the way we all are, trying to survive and come out on the other side with your sanity and your joy and your love and compassion intact. But you've proven to the other mama bears out there that like our potential is limitless when we really are able to lean into the struggle instead of lean away from it, or lean into the discomfort instead of run away from it. And I think you exemplify that in a way that's going to really, really resonate with our listeners. Thank you again, Jody, for this awesome conversation. Today, I want to dare our mama bears to do it scared. So whatever it is, whether it be kind of entering into something terrifying with your friends, or something that's been on your heart to do, like an adoption or starting a business or a nonprofit, or talking to the mom next to you at a basketball game, to just do it scared, but do it anyway, and know that you absolutely have the power to push through the fear, and recognizing your ability to just live a life of compassion and love.
Thanks so much to Jody for talking with us. please subscribe to the Mama Bear Dares podcast on iTunes. Join the Mama Bear community on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter under the name Mama Bear Dares Podcast. And check out our website at www.mamabeardarespodcast.com for the complete show notes to this episode. Thanks so much to Jody's husband, Andy Landers, for providing music for this episode. You can find a link to download more of their incredible music on our website. Until next time, Mama Bears, have a great week.
This is Paul KK on that guitar. Give it up for him. Living the dream while Africa screams. We bow and kneel and pray and say, God bless the USA, let freedom reign. 40 million dead while we sleep in our beds. 8,000 a day we let pass away as death runs through their veins. Not in my backyard, so I'll just look away. You can't let down your guard, but play it safe. Or you might fall into someone else's bad day. Sorry, I can't stay. No, no, no. Oh, not in my backyard. You ought to look away. You can't let down your guard. You better play safe. Or you might fall into someone else's bad day. Sorry, I can't stay. Not in my backyard. You look away. You can't let down your guard. Better play it safe. You might fall into someone else's bad day. Sorry, I can't stay. No, 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 no. Yes, not in my backyard. You ought to look away. You can't let down your guard. Better play it safe. You might fall into someone else's bad day. Sorry, I can't stay. It's not in my backyard. It's not in my backyard. It's not in my backyard, so I guess I'll just pray. No, it's not in my backyard, so I'm gonna stay. No, no. Oh, it's not in my backyard. Not in my backyard, not in my backyard. So I'll just stay, I guess I'll just pray. Not in my backyard, not in my backyard.
take me home, man. Just like this, you know. One of my favorite guys, he's no longer on the planet. You'll know it the minute we start this song, but the only individual who is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, the Country Hall of Fame, the Songwriters Hall of Fame, and then there's a fourth one that I can't remember that we were talking at lunch, NHL or NBA or something like that. Pretty amazing. I think you'll know who he is.